Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Blake Bedingfield joins us to talk some Titans, some Giants, and NFL headlines around the league. He is our NFL scout. You can also read his work at paulkoharski.com. Paul, how are you?
I'm well. I'm in trouble with Browner_Debbie20 because I took a picture of Derrick Henry with a cheesy smile posing with the what apparently is the Angry Run of the Week trophy from Good Morning Football. I'm told Good Morning Football is a good show, and I do respect their effort to pronounce Marcus Mariota's name correctly, but I never watch it. And so I took the picture, and I said, King Henry won some Angry Run trophy from Good Morning Football. And she said, was the phrasing of this tweet intentional? Some Angry Run trophy? It was the Angry Run of the Week trophy. I was like, yeah, I don't really care what some far away venue show is finally paying attention to Titans calls their
the rare case where bigger is not better to goofy, Paul Koharski. Now they're just a faraway goofy show,
goofy
even though they're
trophy.
National.
Yeah. So I've disrespected Good Morning Football apparently, which I again said I've heard is good, and I appreciate they were pronounced Mariota correctly. But their little trophy, I mean, this guy won the Heisman. You think this is going to be a prominently displayed trophy in his house? Answer. That was rhetorical. It's going to be a doorstop somewhere. I'm not even sure if it makes it to his house.
Before we get to Blake, let's get to the real headlines from the locker room. What did you learn today?
Dennis Kelly does not think very often about Dorial Green-Beckham, but he does concede, based on Dorial Green-Beckham not being in the league, that the Titans probably won the trade.
Yeah, that's a... At least he's willing to give that concession.
He owned that part of it?
Yeah.
That's good.
He was like, that's for you guys to decide. And I said, well, I mean, it's pretty clear with him not being in the league. And he goes, yeah, I guess that's fair.
I'd prefer Dennis Kelly cut a wrestling promo on DGB at that point. That'd be even better.
They seem kind of bored today. I don't know that that's me reading into much, but...
What do you mean by bored? Like...
A lot of guys just sitting around waiting for practice to start. You know, a lot of times they're cutting up or whatever. Seem kind of bored today.
Do you want to see more life? More fun-loving?
Yeah, and I'm not one to read into these things, but today just seemed...
That's the first thing you said when you walked in the studio was they seemed bored.
It was a lifeless room today, for whatever that's worth. There was some basketball going on. Bates was playing his music. You know, we had our little exchange.
So it was a normal day.
But do you say something to him every time he does it?
Well, we had a Twitter exchange yesterday. And I just wanted to follow up on that. I said, hey, that was, he said, so I was taking a picture of a sign that said, respect the team, you know, and he said, he was saying to Compton, like, now what he's going to do is he's going to take that picture and he's going to, you know, manipulate it somehow. He didn't manipulate. It's too big a word. He didn't say that. He's going to use it in a way like where he's going to show it where somebody's somehow not respecting the team.
Like you did with Rashard Matthews.
And I said, or I'm going to just use a picture of a sign that says, respect the team. And he was a blah, blah, blah. And I said, hey, I appreciate
yada, yada,
that Twitter. I said, I thought we were making progress. I thought that Twitter exchange was great. You didn't threaten to kill me.
And his response?
I don't know. He went and turned the radio up.
Blake Bedingfield joins us. Blake, your thoughts?
I'm happy to be here. Paul's in a great mood. This should be a fun hour.
Paul is not bored. The Titans may be bored, but Paul is not.
Here's my first question. You've broken down Ben Jones for us, and you've said the same thing repeatedly about his play. I want to know about how a team value a guy like that, because what we've heard repeatedly over the last couple weeks is he does a great job getting people lined up. He's got a great relationship with Mariota. They're close. It's important for the center and the quarterback to get along and be on the same page and all of that. How much can a team overvalue that when a guy's not playing particularly well at that position?
You know, it can be overvalued if the player is just poor, if he is poor week in and week out. But a player like Ben is never going to be poor because he's such an overachiever anyway, overachiever athletically. He's a smart football player. He and Marcus do have a very good relationship, which is extremely important. you know, he is also the type, yeah, he identifies the mic and can make the checks at the line of scrimmage, takes a little bit off the quarterback's plate in that regard, which is also helpful. But if the trust factor between the quarterback and the center is there, that's what's really important. And it seems to be with that group. So the problem comes up is when, if Ben Jones is the weak link on the line of scrimmage as a blocker in pass protection or run, who's the next worst in that group? Well, Ben may not be the worst in that group. And if he's second to worst to maybe Josh Klein this year, then you have two issues. If you have four good players around a player like that, he really doesn't get exposed. Now, Ben is just that. He is an overachiever, and that's not a bad thing in football, because week in, week out, you can rely on him. He's been healthy. He's tough. He's physical. He'll give you a great effort. He's a good practice player. And all those intangible-type qualities that you can't put down on a stat sheet or really on a scouting report outside of saying intangibles.
What if I'm John Robinson, I stand up in the room during personnel meetings after the season's over, and I say, I want 10% less trust, 10% less intangibles, and 10% to 15% better blocking. This is the transaction I want to make at center next year. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. And that's something to do in the offseason, to find that player, that replacement for Ben Jones, whether it's going to be this coming up year in 2019 or for the 2020 season. But that's not just draft somebody and hope he turns out. There's going to be a lot of extensive effort put into finding that right mix to have those intangibles to replace someone like Ben. Because when you take someone out, I've always called him the glue of the offensive line. When you take that glue out from the middle of the offensive line, how does everyone else respond? Who takes over the leadership role? Is Taylor Lewan now your leader? Is Taylor capable of being your leader?
See, here's my. I mean, they played a great game last week. Running back had 238 yards. It's fantastic. But before that, how concerned am I about the glue of a line that's on pace to give up a record in the Tennessee era for sacks?
What else?
I don't care about that.
What else is broken down when you take that person away? I think that's really important.
I don't care.
Important.
Put the next guy in and see how badly he can do.
I think it's important. I think it's important to have someone like that. I'm not saying Ben's the be-all, end-all
right,
here.
I'm not
centers,
saying the next guy I'm doesn't have saying, to have glue qualities, but I'm ready for the next guy.
If he doesn't have the glue qualities, then he needs to have a upgrade in pass and run protection, and that needs to be an emphasis of having a much better player at that position. Whether it's a better,
which means
athlete,
you've got to spend what at least a
you're
going to
spend a second round pick on a center, which is not bad. Charles Bentley's back in the day, Western Richburg's. You know, you're talking about some good centers around the league that teams spend a second round pick on. But that's something you're going to have to go and invest in. Which right now you have someone that your quarterback's comfortable with. Can you now surround him with a left guard and a right guard that doesn't expose his weaknesses?
There's nobody from the personnel department who was in the organization when LeCharles Bentley came out that doesn't use the LeCharles Bentley name, right?
Well, I use that because he was taken one spot ahead of us in the draft when we were going to select him. I remember a projectile going across the room, which was a magnetic card with the name LeCharles Bentley that Floyd Reese threw across the room after he was selected one pick ahead.
And you wound up with?
I'd have to go back and think about that.
Blocked him out of your head.
Yes. It was a downer after that.
I'm looking it up for you just to confirm. It was 2002.
That long ago?
Yeah.
Man, you get
the infamous LeCharles Bentley draft. Of 2002.
LeCharles was a first round caliber player. He was a Pro Bowler. He was until he got really injured and really lost his career to a knee injury. But he was a Pro Bowl caliber player. He was a first round draft choice, graded by all of our scouts, general manager, everybody wanted him. We had not really drafted high for Mike Munchak back in those days. Munchak was getting the third, fourth, fifth round guys and turning them into starters. At that point, Kevin Long was the center early in his career. Which is kind of one of those glue guys that we talk about with Ben Jones. But LeCharles was going to be that next level.
Tank Williams was the selection after LeCharles Bentley.
Okay.
45th overall pick in 2002.
And Tank was a solid player, not special. He was in today's NFL, he's actually a Will linebacker. You know, he was a 6'2.5", 225, 228 pound safety at that point, and we were trying to replace Blaine and those guys, and he was going to play that in the box strong safety, and today he's a nickel linebacker and a will linebacker.
He and Bobby Myers were going to be the new Blaine and Marcus Robinson, right?
Yeah, I don't know if we would have, you know, Bobby was a fourth round pick. Bobby was one of those players that just smart, very, very smart player, had ball, ball skills, instincts, didn't have great speed. You know, Marcus was a really good, both Marcus and Blaine were corners coming out of college that ended up moving to safety, but so they had cover skills as well. But both of those veteran players back in the day were real smart and instinctive. Both of them had excellent ball skills. Bobby was a little bit lesser than that.
Paul, you were worried about having a story a bit surrounding negativity with Derrick Henry, with your recapping what he does after big performances?
Yeah.
But it's a legitimate story that you wrote, follows up the big performances.
He's followed up his 300-yard games with games in which he's averaged 1.8 yards per carry. So obviously they're looking for him to rebound from his biggest game by far ever with a better effort than that, a better team effort than that. But first off, tell us about, could things have come together any better for him? Jags obviously gave up on getting him to the ground a couple times in that game. He read things very well. The offensive line played a lot better than it had. He's very good against that team for whatever reason. It was a magical night.
It was. And, you know, part of Derek got up to speed quick. And, you know, sometimes it takes him a couple of carries to get going. In this game, it was on from the first carry. And you could see the Jaguars really struggle to tackle. It was an embarrassing effort. If I was a defense player, defense coach, that's an embarrassing effort to try to tackle, you know, a 6'3" running back that high and let him stiff arm everyone. Nobody went low. Nobody tried to get him around the knees or the ankles. And, you know, there's ways to attack a big running back, and they just didn't choose to do that. But Derek was getting downhill quick. And, you know, we talk about that all the time, whether it was the inside zone run or the outside of the tackles, where the offensive line, and I'll say the tight ends as well, did a really good job of really walling off the edge of the defense. But, you know, that's usually a defensive line that gets penetration and gets pressure, and there just wasn't a lot of that in this game. And the Jaguars, once the Titans got up early, the Jaguars just kind of gave up is probably a term, I think, on defense. You just didn't see a lot of the effort, and that's disappointing to see from a professional team. But when you get a big running back that starts to pound on you like that, it becomes a long game. And he was not only hitting the long runs of the 99 yards, but those shorter runs were real effective and very beneficial to the offense.
He's not sustained it before when he's had big success. I mean, it's an obvious question. How do they try to go into this game with the intent to try to do something close to sustaining?
Well, part of that is on the defense. So what the defense will see is a big game and how it affected the Titans offense and how successful they became after that. And so the first inclination would be to stop the running back. And that's what happens in games after another big game, especially if it's not consistent. Like, you get a Saquon Barkley that's been pretty consistent throughout, especially the last half of the year. You're going to game plan to take him away anyway. It's probably going to be very tough. But going back to Derek, you know, the first thing is not to let him get up to speed quick. You know, make him start to get lateral, pinch inside, make him get outside the ends of the defense, and, you know, really make him go more lateral than upfield. So you're going to see a lot of that. And if that affects the run game, you may see a switch to a Deion Lewis in that. And that's what ends up affecting a yards per carry situation after a big game.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. Rashawn Evans, let's talk about another Alabama performer. Speaking with Dave McGinnis and listening to him on Titans Radio, he's saying, look, his eyes tell the story. If you watch him and how he is identifying the opposing offense and what they're doing with the football, you can really see a jump in play over the last 5 to 6 weeks. Have you noticed that?
No question. He's playing fast. And Rashawn came into the league as a fast flow linebacker, meaning he's a fast attacker on the other side of the line of scrimmage. He can go lateral with his speed and quickness. You know, he has that ability. He has a physicality to him, even though he's not an oversized inside linebacker. the first five or six games of the year, he just didn't see it. He looked confused. He was getting covered up by blockers. I would say the last four games has been a totally different linebacker. He looks more comfortable in his role. Part of that was them taking the nickel role off of him, which they put on him early, and just allowing him to play in that base defense or against more of the run. You see more of a three linebacker rotation now. You'll see Rashawn and Jayon Brown on the field at times, along with the Wesley, Woodard and Jayon Brown combination, and now Woodard and Evans. So they're getting more comfortable with him, and you like to see that, especially from those three linebackers. It adds speed to the defense, but he's got that ability to have some physicality in the middle of the offense, in between the tackles, versus run plays at him. But he also has the speed to play lateral.
Has he flashed his overall potential at times now that he's starting to figure things out and play faster, or do you think there's a much better level he can get to?
I think there's a much better level. I think he actually has pass rush skill, which you're starting to see him do a little bit more of. He actually had a nice rush in the game on Thursday night, but you want to see more of that. And part of that's opportunities. He's just not getting as many opportunities right now to rush the passer. But I think he can be a more of effective blitzer from the inside as well when they allow him to do that. Jayon Brown has been real successful this year in that role, but I think even adding another dimension to his game is the nickel linebacker role, where he can actually be in coverage. He has the speed and athleticism to cover a tight end, to cover running backs out of the backfield, especially on the perimeter of the defense, where he can use his speed and quickness and really good open field tackling. That's what he's had in college.
I like going behind the scenes with you a bit through your experience in the league and front offices and just what GMs are likely thinking. But As you see Evans progress and you see Jayon Brown take that big next step in what he's done in year two, what do you think privately they're saying about that combo moving forward? What are they envisioning when they think about Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown together?
You know, I think Jayon's taken the step that I'm not quite sure everyone thought that he was going to. I think most people thought he was just going to be a nickel linebacker, someone that's more in coverage, more in the zone part of the coverage of the defense. But he's really shown that he's gotten more physical over this past year. He was not a physical linebacker at UCLA or in his first year with the Titans. But this year he's attacking behind the line of scrimmage. He's rushing the passer. He's actually trying to shed blockers. He's not just taking on a blocker and staying blocked. He's actually getting off blocks. He's running downfield to make plays. You're seeing a whole level of intensity in his play, which is very good. So I think that combination with what they drafted Rashawn to do was what eventually take over Wesley Woodyard's role. Mm-hmm. Wesley's getting up there in age, his contract's coming up. So, you know, this is a perfect situation for them to have two inside linebackers moving forward. They don't have to go out and really address the starting role. Next year, if they don't re-sign a Wesley Woodard, now they have their two inside linebackers in place, and now you can draft for depth a fourth, a fifth round inside backer.
Over the final three games, maybe they go to the postseason, maybe they don't. Final month of the season, though. How much of the play of current veterans with contracts upcoming determines whether or not they're going to give them a year or two option, not an option, but a year or two offer this offseason? Or have those decisions largely already been determined? Specifically, Morgan, Arakpo, Woodyard, have those decisions likely been determined in your experience? Or are they still evaluating where they might be three games from now?
I would say from a personnel standpoint, those decisions have already been made. Who you want back, you know who's in the draft, you know what's coming up in free agency, you know what you have depth wise. I would say the only thing that could really change the thinking is if you had a catastrophic injury at a position where you're not predicting right now. And I'm saying whether an outside linebacker or a young outside linebacker that you're expecting to be there has an injury that puts him out for all of next year. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but that would be something where you revisit that veteran player and say, well, we're going to give him a one-year deal that's more club-friendly and be able to put him in place while we draft someone,
right,
and then they develop. Because, you know, at some point, every player hits a wall, and it's predicting when they can hit the wall. Have some of those players already done that? I think so, and I know the team sees that as well. So they'll be moving on from a couple of these veteran guys.
There aren't that the list really isn't that big. Give us your yes or no if you'd want them back. Arakpo.
No.
Morgan.
No.
Logan. Benny Logan.
No, because you can replace them.
Yeah. Trawick.
No.
Spain.
Yes.
You'd like back, but you think he's going to get no bigger money.
There's no replacement on the roster.
But you think he's probably going to get courted.
You know, I think he's going to have opportunities. The one thing about Quentin is he's still young. He's still developing. You want to keep that core together as much as possible. We talked about Ben Jones's deficiencies that aren't going to get any better, and Josh Klein's either. But Quentin actually has another level of play that he hasn't reached yet. He's just now really kind of getting into the prime of his career.
Vaccaro.
I like Kenny. I think Kenny's played well. You know, Kenny's one of those you got to keep an eye on where is the wall for him? Kenny's a physical player. He's been that. He's had some injuries over his career. He may reach that wall a little sooner not based on age as much, but how many games he's played and that type of thing.
Vaccaro is an example of if I'm in the position, I envision playing the game within the game because he waited until August. No, waited until the end of July to sign with the team. I float something out there pretty early on this offseason and see if he bites at it. Instead of waiting a full offseason like he did last year, do you want to be back or not? Because I think if you get him at the right contract, I do want him as a part of the defense.
Start working out with that secondary
but
right after vacation.
My point is that there is some value with what he's brought to the team. And I could go draft someone. I could continue things with Cyprian. My whole point is I'm making sure that Vaccaro has the option to come back.
No question. I think Kenny's been a better player than Jonathan Cyprian was a year ago, and now Cyprian's coming off the knee
off
injury,
the injury
as well.
Yeah. So,
and he's still under contract.
And you saw what the team had to do by picking up Kendrick Lewis, really right. Not a player that is going to come in and you want him to start. Really not. And that's what really is usually out there in free agency are those type of players.
A couple more. Compton.
No.
Stocker.
No.
Got to upgrade there, right?
Yeah, so that list is not that tough. I think Woodyard is a player that, you know,
he's
I would
got
want
one
to
year
bring.
Left.
I'd like so to bring perfect. Him back regardless. And, you know, he's that type. So it's not a big list.
I was going back in time, Blake, to before the season and envisioning Ndamukong Suh having come here instead of signing with the Rams. He's only got 3.5 sacks. And that's playing next to Aaron Donald, who's obviously, you know, one of the best players in the league. It wouldn't have been a cure-all, but I sure would have been curious to see what they could have done with him, given the fact that the rest of the defensive line outside of Jarrell Casey's 7 sacks has 1 sack. And you were early on this saying that you just didn't see enough pass rush ability on the defensive line. I mean, they got to fall into a sack there, don't they? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys, 1 sack.
You know, a lot of sacks the interior defensive linemen get are sacks they fall into at times, whether it's a Jarrell Casey creating that pressure, making the quarterback step up, or your outside rush making the quarterback step up into the pocket and you end up getting a number of sacks. That's just not happening this year. The Titans just really don't have that extra pass rusher outside of Casey on the inside. Daquan Jones is an excellent two-gap run player. It's really what he is. He can get a little push at times, but he's not going to win a lot in obvious pass rush situations. Austin Johnson is almost a mirror image of Daquan in the sense that he's versatile enough to play nose in a 5 technique, but he's more of a rundown player with the occasional ability to create a hurry or pressure. But what they really lack is
Jones
that
Jones had 3.5 sacks last year and got hurt, you know, missed a month.
And he's going to run into some at times, and that's what you want. But this year they're not creating as much of the outside pass rush. Rakpo, Morgan, even Landry, it's fallen off. There's really not an outside rush that is making the quarterback step up. Casey's having a very good year. He's having another Jarrell Casey year. He is demanding a lot of double teams, and he's winning. He is splitting double teams. He's running around. They are running a lot more games with him now to get him free. Jarrell Casey is probably one of the better interior defensive linemen running stunts and twists because he has that excellent balance and body control for a bigger guy, and he's already has great pad level being a 6-foot defensive lineman, very similar to like an Aaron Donald. You get him on the move and get offensive lineman guessing, he's a tough player to wall off and press out once he gets that crease.
And he may not be creating for Austin Johnson or for Daquan Jones, But some of those sacks that are coming up the middle from unlikely, and we would have said before this season, unlikely Jayon Brown for sure. Some of what's coming up the middle there is are benefiting from Case.
No question. You know, Jayon Brown has had a number of sacks where he's been unblocked going through the interior offensive line. And a lot of that is because Jarrell Casey is demanding that double team. And then with the speed of a Jayon Brown or a Wesley Woodard in the middle, they really attack the other side of the offense really, really fast. And if an offensive lineman is slow to identify and redirect his feet, he's going to miss that block, and that's what's happening on a lot of those sacks. They're taking advantage of the opportunity that Jarrell is being doubled.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. Blake, as scouts across the league begin to set their bowl schedule, you're the former director of college scouting. How do you go about that? How do you determine who you send where? More so based on region, I know, but how do you determine, okay, if there's multiple games in the same region, we want this guy on this game, you're going here, GM's going here. How much planning and thought goes into that?
You know, a lot. What you want to do is, first of all, the bowl games are, each team is only given a handful of bowl games. And it's done by a lottery through the NFL. You're allowed one of the playoff games, one of the high-level bowl games. They give them an A, B, and C, and D category. And you're given two of the Bs and three of the Cs and of, I think, four of the last group of bowl games. So, you know, you're allowed only a handful of bowl games that you're allowed to go to. Now, you can make trades with other teams, which is what we do on a number of occasions, where if we want the Sugar Bowl because we want to see the players in that Sugar Bowl, we'll make a trade with and trade our Rose Bowl to a team that has it. So, you know, there are some wheeling and dealing going along for the bowl game access. And
but you only trade, like, you don't trade anything but bowl games?
That's it. Yeah, okay. You're just trading bowl games, one for one. And
you're not sending like a pack of footballs or anything?
No, not at all. There are a number of teams that just don't go to bowl games at all. They're having their draft meetings at that time, and they just don't go to bowl games. So you go and you make friends with the director of college scouting in those groups, and they give you any bowl game you want. So
why do they limit the number of games you can attend?
You know, because what would end up happening is there would be 32 general managers, there'd be a director of college scouting, a director of player personnel, and now the press box is full and no journalists, no other people are there. NFL people tend to overdo it for these games because they're not only good games to view and watch, they're in good cities to go and, you know, at that time of the year. So, you know, people would take advantage of it. So they needed to limit it from a space standpoint. Now, if you want to go buy a ticket, you can go to any game you want. You just have to sit in the stands and possibly stand up if everybody.
Will they sell you a ticket, or are you on your own?
They will sell a ticket at times. You know, it just depends. You can always work with the different teams to get a ticket.
How often did you have to sit in the stands?
Very rarely. I just chose not to go if I had to sit in the stands. You know, it's one of those that small school games I've always loved to sit in the stands. It was a better. If it's real cold outside, I'm not sitting in the
stands. What's the biggest gain from being there? As you're going to ultimately have the film and you're going to watch it whether you were there or not. The biggest gain from being there,
as opposed to
waiting for the film.
You know, what I like to do is see a high volume number of players. You know, if you've got a team like Alabama this year that's going to have a number of players drafted, it's not only important to go to the game, but it's also important to go to the practice leading up to it. And there's a lot of the schools that allow you, when they're on site at the bowl site, they'll allow you to go to practice as well. So what you'll do is you'll make your travel schedule to where a game's out in Arizona, for instance, you may go to Arizona, see the practices of the two teams on one day, go to San Diego to see the practices of the two teams that are playing out in the San Diego game, and kind of work your schedule that way. So not only are you seeing a game, but you're seeing a lot of practices leading up. And I think that's just as important, especially for general managers who maybe didn't get out in the fall. This is their first time to really get out and see a bunch of games, and they're going to want to see a high volume number of players.
Did you ever make a big trade for a bowl game that you absolutely had to go and attend?
You know, I went to one. It was the Chick-fil-A Bowl And Texas A&M had a number of players the 1 year. It ended up being a great game. It's probably one of the few games I've ever stayed till the end. It went into overtime versus Duke and ended up being a great game. But Duke had a few players, but Texas A&M had a number of players that we wanted to see that year. So that was one that we didn't have initially that I made a trade for. But we also had Marcus's, when Marcus came out, we had to make a trade. I believe he was in the Rose Bowl that year. We had to make a trade to get that game for our general manager to go out to that.
Big trade.
That game, so.
Ever a two-for-one situation?
No two-for-ones that I remember. I never remember giving up two to give one or vice versa.
I feel like it's a big Monopoly game. That's what I'm picturing.
It is, yeah. A little bit. You know, most of the time.
I need Park Place. I'll give you Ventnor and Indiana.
You know, if you want the bowl game down in Birmingham, Alabama, they're probably just giving it to you most of the time.
You get those on the street.
Yeah, you can actually walk into it and...
this is the Titan section of the Birmingham Bowl today. Exactly the entire right. wing.
I've been to that one, by the way.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. The crew is all here today. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Blake Bedingfield with us. You can read his work at paulkoharski.com. Blake, Saquon Barkley has been exceptional. He's going to be the offensive rookie of the year in the National Football League for his rookie season this year with the Giants. When you see him, some would say he's a generational back, you know, up there with like a Todd Gurley type. What are the determining factors other than, oh, this guy's really good, that make him the number two overall pick and not Alvin Kamara in New Orleans? And it was a day two selection.
You know, I think in today's NFL, you have to have the combination of running and catching ability. And Saquon has that. He's a dynamic runner. He's got great size, great balance, great body control, power. He also has outstanding speed. But you flip it to the receiving side, he has very good hands. He has excellent open field running ability. He gets up to speed quick. He breaks really poor lower body tackles. He's just that one player that has come out in the past few years that you say can do it all. He's going to be on the field all three downs. When he comes out, he needs a rest. That's it. You know, Todd Gurley had the injury concerns when he came out, or Todd would have been a top three or four pick in the draft. You know, instead he was the 10th or 11th pick, but, you know, he just had the knee concern. But, you know, those are those special type backs that you don't see every year. Usually the Alvin Kamaras, you know, Alvin is not going to be a guy that's going to carry the ball 20, 25 times a game, but he's going to touch it that amount because you want the ball in his hands as a receiver, as a runner. He's going to be a little bit more of a combination back with another running back for your team, even though he can, you know, be a starter in the league. There's no doubt about it. But Saquon just he checks all the boxes as a person, learns the system really, really well. Outstanding run vision, balance, body control, speed, hands. He's got it all, and he showed it in college. He had the track record there, had the production there, and then he goes to the NFL and does it quick.
What made Odell Beckham Jr. so difficult to scout in 2014 coming out of LSU?
You know, that was a team that had Jarvis Landry as the other receiver, who was a more productive player. They had Jeremy Hill as the running back, who was a very productive running back on that team. You know, Lyle Collins was the offensive lineman on that team. You're talking about some high draft choices. Zach Mettenberger was the quarterback. But, you know, Odell did not show that game-breaking ability at LSU on a consistent basis. Jarvis Landry was the more productive player. He was the one that defenses were a little bit more afraid of at that time. Odell always ran his routes very, very smooth and relaxed and crisp, had excellent hands. That was obvious. You go out to practice, you see his hands. But in games, he wasn't as dominant. He did it at times. Just wasn't consistent with it. Again, Jarvis Landry was the one that you knew couldn't really run very fast. But, man, he got open, he caught a lot of balls, and was really productive. But, you know, he was a little bit of an aloof personality, where Jarvis was the exact opposite. Jarvis was that gamer, man. He was on all the time. Odell's got a little bit more of a relaxed personality. how is that going to translate to the NFL? I think the more you got around him, the more you interviewed him, the more you talked to him, you felt a little bit more of an inner fire with Odell than you saw on the field in college. And that's translated. He is productive, especially put in a competitive situation. When he goes up against a really good corner or a really good team, he really produces, and that's what you want to see out of a player like him. You know, I thought Mettenberger as the quarterback, that should have been one of the best teams in the SEC in the country, and he kind of held that team back a little bit. I remember being at the Alabama game against LSU that year. It was in Tuscaloosa, and Mettenberger got hit over and over and over again, and they would run this little bubble screen with Jarvis Landry, and every time they would run it, you know, it was a 10-12 yard gain, but Mettenberger continued to want to throw the ball downfield vertically, and he was getting hit and sacked a number of times in that game. So, you know, there were some things that held them back from being as good as their talent would allow.
Beckham was limited in practice yesterday for the Giants. The Athletic there in New York saying that his quadriceps issue was, quote, much better than last week. But when reporters asked for the specifics, Beckham said today, quote, I don't know. Bleep ain't right, is what he said. He's also going to get an extra opinion on his quad injury today, according to reports.
Well, the extra opinion would probably be his. He wants that second opinion because he doesn't feel right. And I would think reading that news just the way you read it, I would say he's probably out for Sunday.
Bleep
ain't right.
Ain't right. They've got a lot of picks. But it's a little bit odd to look at the top of the ledger and see a linebacker, a strong linebacker, Alec Ogletree. What's keyed it for him, and what do the Titans need to be wary of with him?
You know, Alec is he came over from the Rams in a trade. This was a really good athlete coming out of Georgia. He has coverage ability as well as the ability to play the run. You know, he's one of those multi-dimensional type linebackers that you want on your team. A little bit like what the Titans want Rashawn Evans to become. You know, Alec is a guy that can cover the tight ends. He can cover the running backs out of the backfield. He can also blitz at times, but he's very good against the run. He's got really good speed. And that'll show up on the field pretty quick. So, you know, those are the type of linebackers that you want in the league. Now, I loved Alec when he came out of Georgia. He goes to the Rams and actually had a nice little stretch there before they traded him to the Giants.
Watching Eli Manning, has he improved as the season's gone on, or is his play more a product of them figuring out how to utilize Saquon Barkley and the offense around him getting better? Or have you seen just better play from him overall also?
I think it's improved in the sense that he's using Saquon more in the passing game, and that's really helped Eli. Instead of stretching the ball downfield to Odell and, you know, those deep outside the numbers or the deep end cut routes that you're going to run, he's using Sterling Shepard a lot more. He's using Saquon Barkley, even Rhett Ellison, and probably for this game, I think Rhett Ellison is hurt, but the tight end, but Evan Engram it would be an option too. But he's starting to utilize that short intermediate passing game, which is really more effective for a late 30s quarterback. So he's become better in the sense that he's using his more talented players better.
Big game tonight, Thursday Night Football, Chargers and Chiefs. The Chargers, with their record, are still the 5 seed right now because of the Chiefs. But if they want anything to say about that, they need to win tonight. Do you like L.A.? Do you believe in L.A.? As a playoff team?
I do when they have Melvin Gordon. If they don't have Melvin Gordon, I don't believe in them as much. I don't think they have that supplement at running back. I think Melvin adds a totally different dimension to that offense and allows Phillip Rivers to have more weapons, which he will use and utilize. You know, they really don't have the tight end weapon. They have the really good receivers. But when Melvin is there and they can use the screen game, they can use those passes in the flats, they become a different offense.
That game in Kansas City, by the way, should be fun.
You have a gut feeling on Titans on Sunday?
You know, I wonder what Saquon, how they're going to stop Saquon Barkley. I think the Titans offense is starting to roll. You see them gaining more confidence. It looks like they're leaning more to Derrick Henry over the past few weeks, which is what you, if you're going to have success, that's what you need to be, is run through Derrick Henry as a running game and supplement with Deion Lewis.
Slogo was no solo tackles, is what Vrabel was preaching this week.
And you know what? The Titans have done a really good job of that this year, of being more of a gang tackling type defense. Yep. So that's what they're going to have to do.
They only take one or two, though.
Without Odell Beckham in the lineup, they're allowed to not worry as much about the passing game. If he's in the lineup, they still have to pay attention to him. And, you know, you got a veteran quarterback with a lot of weapons when Odell's playing. If he's not, then Saquon Barkley could be more of a focal point on what they're going to do and try to stop. But he's been unstoppable a little bit this past 4 or 5 weeks.
I'm worried about those interception numbers. Huh? That's my concern. The Giants' interception numbers lately.
Blake will detail the matchup against the Giants at paulkoharski.com later this week. Blake, always enjoy having
you
in.
Brother.
I say later this week, I'm acting like it's Tuesday. Yeah, tomorrow morning.
It was great being here. Paul seemed to be in a better mood toward the end of the hour, so everything went great. Calmed you down a little bit.
The softening, as we call it.
More time away from Bates, the better I get. It's the Bates meter.
Oh, man. Blake, we'll see you Tuesday.
You bet. Look forward to it.
Thanks.